This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working for you, Lou?
Oh, yeah.
Working for me.
And Michael, is that you there?
Yes, this is Michael Dean.
And
I sound like
Nick,
a drag queen.
The Hazy Yak. Can you hear us, Nick?
I can hear you, and I feel it.
We're all
cool,
together.
Man.
Hey, Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. So learn more about that at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, I've got like four computer screens open right now, and I'm not monitoring my Alexa ranking like Chris Cantwell. I'm actually being the Libertarian Central Scrutinizer here. It kind of looks like the NSA here. I have all these different big screens open, and so does everyone in the Fiends, because we're trying to solve an issue related to Fiend Phone. This is a teaching hospice. So now that I'm on oxygen, it's a teaching hospice and not hospital. So we're trying to find out why we have occasional dropouts. We're trying to figure out whether it's a Fiend Phone issue, a memory issue, a network issue, or a memory issue on a local computer or on the Fiend Phone server we have at GCN's, which may need some more memory. So basically, we all have all these graphs open, and we're monitoring like the disk usage, the CPU usage, the network usage, and the memory usage, and looking for spikes if we hear one of these things. And I think we should just say out loud if we hear a, if anybody hears a dropout. I think that's easier than all texting each other, and it's a teaching hospital. So I don't care that it's bad radio. It's good teaching hospice. So I want to talk about something here. It's very dear to my heart, and it's criticizing Christopher Cantwell and Stefan Molyneux. And, you know, I'm sitting here like in the hospice with an oxygen tube in my nose, with an undiagnosed illness. We're still trying to figure out what it is, with like life-threatening asthma-like symptoms that are not treated by asthma medicine. I don't care. I will use my last dying breath to criticize Christopher Cantwell and Stefan Molyneux. So really briefly, and I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but occasionally they do something really stupid. So Chris Cantwell is trying to clean up his act. He used to be Chris Cantwell, atheist, anarchist, a-hole. I can't say the whole word on radio, but that was like his business card, his tagline, the top of his website. He's changed that recently. It's no longer a-hole. It's abolitionist. So it's atheist, anarchist, abolitionist. Now, here's the funny thing. That kind of makes sense.
He's against slavery now?
Yeah, he's against the soft slavery. It kind of makes sense. Although you had a point, Randy. What was it, if you're going to use that term or the other term?
Well, I don't know. Abolitionist, without a context, I guess it's really vague, because you could abolish just about anything.
Yeah.
But the word anarchist, that's about as crystal clear as
it really
be,
right? I mean, abolitionist could mean you want to abolish gun rights, for all I know, you know. But here's the thing that's kind of funny.
So he's like a Republican?
Yeah, I guess. So Campbell's like trying to like clean up his hand and clean up his image and, you know, not be the one everyone hates to the public, to try to get more users or, you know, victims or people that'll send him a dollar here and there. So, but he picks a word that's like the only other person that uses that, the guy who built that, is a freedom fiend. It's Bill Buport. So, like, Chris Cantwell is hopping on the pole here of Bill Buport. Like, you know, oh, I want to be cool, like the freedom fiends. Now, it's kind of funny because he hates the freedom fiends. He won't even, like, debate us or, like, talk to us. Like, you know, MK Lord's called in to criticize him and argue with him. And he's like, I mean, this is the guy that'll, like, go after his enemies with bear spray. You know, go after men in their homes with bear spray. But, like, you know, some, like, 98-pound, skinny, soaking wet, cute little woman calls him up and wants to have a polite conversation with him. And he's like, la, 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 I don't hear you. So the guy hates the fiend. Somehow we get under his cuffs and collars. But it's so funny, man. He picked this word. He's copying Bill Buport. And Bill Buport's an honorable man. And I like him. He's cool. He's going to be back in the fiend soon. He's currently, like, out keeping the world safe from democracy or something, but he'll be back. So what say you fellas?
I don't have any real opinions on it. I will say that having the a-hole on there was truth in advertising.
Well, the kind of funny thing is that he still has that on his Facebook, but he's really particular on his Facebook of who he lets view him. He's blocks everybody, including me. So, like, he still is an a-hole to his friends, but to the general voting and, you know, like, potentially giving beer money, you know, to the Libertarian Welfare Queens public that hasn't heard of him yet, he doesn't want to be the a-hole anymore. He's trying to be, like, the acceptable face of cop killing or something.
You mean on the blog?
On the blog, sorry.
On the blog.
Yeah, on the blog.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you were saying about, you know, when MK calls in, yeah, that always, sometimes I've found myself paying attention to listen to Free Talk Live on Wednesday night and hoping that MK would call in, and then just to hear the reaction, because it's kind of like somebody broke into the studio and started splashing holy water on a vampire. It's that bad, you know.
Yeah, I don't listen on Wednesdays, but and the thing is, when he first got on there, I complained loud and hard to Ian and Mark, like, dude, don't have that guy on there. He's horrible. You're gonna regret it. They're like, oh, it's good radio. It's like, you know, Howard Stern. It'll controversy brings listeners, and I was like, I don't know, man, whatever, you know, your business. But they said, like, well, you know, he's only on Wednesdays and he'll only ever be on Wednesdays, but he's creeping into other days. He's sometimes on 2 or 3 days a week now. So, it's like a fungus, man, invading my cool radio show. I like to listen to my favorite radio show, Free Talk Live.
I personally don't have a whole lot of problems with him. I find that I agree with him.
You have to, or I'm firing you from the Freedom Fiends. I'm kidding.
What are you going to do, though? Dock my wages?
He's going to block you.
No, I'll start paying you.
Oh, I love Christopher Cantwell. Pay me more. No, I find that I agree with him in many cases. He's probably one of the better writers out there.
It's no, just I think it's two different people. I think that, like, that's actually a committee of government infiltrators. Well, it's too well written.
The thing about writing is you don't have, like, the personality, the context, the intonation, and all the other things that you get out of speech. I wholeheartedly agree with the whole a-hole thing, because he really does come off as an a-hole, and I'm a bit of one myself, so it doesn't put me off so much, but I could see where it would really put off, you know, maybe the more, I don't want to say humanitarian type, but the gentler flowers, the more delicate flowers.
Yeah, he actually writes his own stuff, but it really does seem like two different people, because sometimes he'll answer comments, maybe when he's drunk, maybe he writes when he's just barely buzzed or sober and works on it really hard and actually revises, which few bloggers do, and writes very coherently, very eloquently, very well, with no typos. And then he'll, like, answer comments, and, I mean, he sounds like a drunken 8-year-old with an attitude problem, literally. Like, you know, like, his vocabulary drops down, and his sentence structure gets down to, like, 2- and 3-word sentences. Like, you dumb stupid, get off my, I hate you, you dumb, go away, I block you. You know, like that. So, I want to move on and get this all out of the way in the first segment, because I feel like I'm dying. And I do want to use my last dying breaths to criticize idiots. So the other one is Stefan Molyneux. And I do want to say, this is a secret that's going to come out sooner or later. He pays people to write some of his speeches. Some of the keynote speeches that he's given. That Bitcoin thing he gave in Europe at some point. It was like, he said was the best thing he ever did. Somebody was paid to write that. And I know the name of the person that was paid to write that. But the guy, like, doesn't want people to know, so I can't really say who it was.
That's pretty horrible.
Yeah, that is pretty horrible. I mean, I guess I wouldn't say it's like a violation of the non-aggression principle, but it kind of is fraud. But it's also what politicians do, you know. So he's acting like a politician. But the latest thing he's done has been really square, like an old cranky Christian. Like you'd think Randy would be. If you look at a picture of him, and instead you find out, like, Randy's this really hip, open-minded guy who, you know, smoked LSD with Timothy Leary and the Beatles back in the 40s.
I told you to keep that quiet.
Okay. But Molyneux did this thing recently called The Truth About Makeup, where he criticized, like, basically said that women who wear makeup are whores and they're overcompensating for things and they're not honest. And that's, like, something that old square Christians say, man. It's weird.
Wow. Some of the nicest girls I know are...
Some of the nicest, yeah, some of the nicest women and girls I know, some of the most honest wear makeup.
Some of the most honest and nicest women I know are whores.
There you go. That's true, too. But I don't know, man. So Molyneux, like, hates makeup. He hates high heels, he said. He hates kink. He hates non-monogamous sex of any kind. And he hates karate and martial arts.
Let me ask you, how would anyone know that he hates those things?
He said it.
I mean, the whole world is filled with things that we all have opinions about, right?
Well, he said that martial arts, if you practice martial arts, you just want to hit people.
Well, I know, but if it's not important to what you're talking about, I mean, why would you even want to anger people who happen to like that? Like, you know, why would you?
Because he and Cantwell are the same. You know, basically, like, I kind of think of Molyneux as like the... like the highbrow Cantwell. You know, they both just love to poke the world and get controversy and try to stir up the pot. And
well, I guess when you're looking for hits on the internet, that's one thing. I mean, I'm not going to dish you, you know, just because you like broccoli, even though I
at least Cantwell's still a pretty, you know, what's the word, where you're one way all the time with the other way, like consistent. Anarchist, but like Molyneux is actually like, you know, backing the cops, especially when they shoot black people, it seems like now.
Wow. I think Molyneux is like the typical Puritan statist Republican that has the idea of how the world should be run and will spare no amount of violence to make it happen, even though he preaches against using violence to make things happen. But he's very judgmental and very nasty and demeaning to things that he doesn't like and also doesn't even understand. Because I remember when you had your conversation with him about the different kink, and he said, yeah, I guess his response was, oh, well, maybe I'll have to look at that and check it out a little bit more.
He always says that when he's losing an argument, and then he never looks at it. That's one of his techniques. That's what he's known for.
Well, at any rate, more stealing oxygen when we come back.
Yeah, I'm going to go breathe oxygen this. And get off the show for a while. The oxo load.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from Bearscat, Michigan, somewhere in Missouri, it's all the same, and Methville, Oregon. How you guys doing?
Great.
Doing great. Right here from mid-Missouri.
All righty. So, Randy, you had a question for young Nick in the break. Because Nick is the yak farmer. When are you going to ride your yaks out to Beast Lick or up here to Bearscat, Nick?
Well, as soon as I can tame one.
How much, you know, where do you buy a yak saddle?
Ooh, that's a good question.
So you, I guess there's not much point in having one until you break your first yak. Is that pretty fair to say?
Yeah, I would say so.
Well, anyway, what I was going to ask you, I mean, I think we've talked to you about yak farming in the past, and that's kind of interesting, but when it comes to yak farming, surely there must be rules against allowing are you 16, is that right?
Right, yeah.
A 16-year-old to be able to raise yaks. I mean, here you are just barely out of the womb, and you're raising these yaks unregulated. How can that be in a country like this?
Well, there isn't too many things regarding age or really getting into the market so much, but the main issue with any kind of meat production with small farmers is that you
have I hate to cut you off, but I just heard a dropout. Did anybody else hear that?
Yeah, I heard it. I saw a little spike.
Right here on the teaching hospital. Okay, I'm sorry.
I apologize.
Sincerely. You know, hospice is such an ugly... I mean, I think it's hospital is still good. That's so dark. All right, I'm sorry I interrupted you, Nick. You were talking about how the man has his foot on the yak farmer's throat. So, go ahead.
Yeah, right. So, to be able to sell meat from an animal, you have to take your animals to a USDA-inspected butchering facility, a slaughterhouse. And there aren't a whole lot of those. Oregon has one, at least, and some good places. I have one near Oregon State University. It's run by Oregon State University. But it's a bit more expensive, I believe, to take your animals there. And it's much easier to go to your regular mom-and-pop butchering place to get your animals butchered. But if you do, you can't sell packaged meat. You have to sell the animal on the hoof. And for me, it doesn't matter so much with pigs, because I can sell pig and people take pig in the freezer. But a yak is much larger, and not everybody wants a whole yak or even a half a yak in their freezer. So it's very irritating to try and have to sell animals on the hoof rather than just have it slaughtered and try and sell by the package.
Well, is there some reason why? I mean, they must have a reason why you could sell a yak only in one piece rather than in a package of yak meat, right? I mean, they're not crazy, are they? What's behind that?
Well, I would say they are crazy. I believe the rationale behind it is that it's about food handling. So if I sell meat, I'm handling food. But if I sell an animal, I'm just handling an animal.
Well, when you do it, you probably do it, you know, you wear a hairnet, gloves, you know, like they do in a restaurant.
Well, I don't actually cook the food, but no, I take it to a facility that's... has its right certifications and it follows all the regulations they have to do for butchering. So either way, I'm taking it to a facility that is up to date. It's just the places that I take them aren't inspected by the USDA.
I'm curious what all is involved in those USDA inspections. Do they have like some bureaucrat walking around with a clipboard and a white coat and a hard hat inspecting the facility constantly, or does somebody just drop by there like once a year and look at a couple things and go on back about being a tax eater?
I think it would be the latter.
Yeah, I suspect so too.
So are these... Are these
everybody
places,
has a side go ahead, Randy.
Are the places that you would go to, they're certified for certain animals, but not for others?
Yes, that can happen. There are places that can only do poultry. I believe it's easier to be able to be certified to do small animals in poultry rather than large animals like cattle and yak.
A yak isn't bigger than a cow, is it?
No, but it's still considered large livestock.
Huh.
And we will be back right after this trip to the market, the meat market. More Freedom Fiends coming up.
Worms. But a properly Yaks. Certified meat market.
Certified worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we are back from the market. And this is Randy England. I'm here with Lou.
Drugs.
And I'm here with
and guns.
Nick, the hazy yak.
He bought yaks.
And Michael W. Dean is here. And I thought I was going to have to make a pitch during the break there. I thought he was going to hold out for some donations at the Freedom Fiends website.
Yeah. But we're not going to talk until we get some money.
He's hanging around.
We're libertarian welfare queens.
Is that and Lou is with us too now? Is that right,
Lou's
Lou?
Back.
And none of those one Satoshi donations either, because we'll call you out on the podcast.
Malinu
for
gets
that.
Like 20 of those a day. It's pretty funny.
I know some of the people that send them.
Who does it?
Various people on the interwebs.
You got to tell me later. That's funny.
They're just trolling.
Yep. Trolling with their Bitcoin wallet.
Yes. Well, before we went to the break, I think we were talking about poor Nick, who's just trying to make a buck raising yaks, and he has a hard time getting his yaks butchered.
Hey, is it a violation of the non-aggression principle if I send Chris Cantwell one Satoshi?
Oh, absolutely not.
I know it's not. It's a violation of the Don't Be a Richard principle, but he lives to violate that, so I'm going to go do that.
He might give you a shout-out on the radio.
No, man, we're the show that we're the host that cannot be named.
All right, then.
All right.
Well, later. Nick, I'm talking to Nick here for a minute, but I haven't heard his voice. Are you there, Nick?
I'm here.
Oh, there's Nick. Well, the trouble that you're having with your yaks is that you can only sell whole live yaks, and you would like to be able to sell, say, a yak steak or a yak burger or something like that, right?
I would. I really would.
I mean, has anyone ever even tried yak head cheese or something like that? I mean, this is a wide open thing. I do not think the market is saturated for yak, and yet, why do you think they're doing this to you? Why can't you take your yak anywhere you want and have it ground up or chopped up or whatever they do at the butchers? What's the deal? I mean, why are they doing this? Do you know?
Well, I do believe that at least what they say is that it's to make sure that these facilities are within the USDA's certifications, and they can only certify so many. But I think the real issue is whether this is intentional or not is that these smaller butchering facilities they aren't able to get those certifications. I don't believe they are, at least. I've never actually talked to these people, but they don't have a large enough facility to actually do that.
When you use the word certification, what you're talking about is a government license, right?
Right.
I mean, this isn't a private thing. This is the FDA or the USDA that has to give these permissions. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the USDA.
Do you see any other way that they could? You want people to be safe, of course, but people also want to know that they're getting a safe product, right?
Yeah, you do. You do need to.
Well, how would you do it? How would you do it without the state?
Well, I do believe that business owners have the interest of their customer in mind. They want to make money, and in order to make money, they have to please their customer. And it does not do you any good if you poison the meat of your customers.
How do you expect to get return customers if you don't kill them?
The yaks or the customers?
The customers. I mean, killing the yaks is a given. But I really wonder where the root of all these regulations are. The average status will say, oh, well, it was to ensure safety because there was tainted meat back in some time. And I'm pretty sure that it's kind of like all the different industries that are out there. The industry themselves had lobbied for these special grants from government, because we know licensing is when government takes your right to do something away from you and then sells it back to you. And I think the companies that got the certifications, they lobbied for it so that it would eliminate competition.
And so that those licenses were mandatory, not just certifications. I mean, you know, it's funny. That's the way most government licenses do come about, is the people that are already in the business want the government to enact laws to force everybody else to come up and do it their way. And hopefully it's set up in a way that small guys be priced out of the market, right?
Absolutely. That's usually the case.
Okay, but if you go back, well, actually back to the late 1800s, the one outfit that's still out there that really started this thing is, everybody's heard of the Underwriters Laboratories, they're an independent, you know, product safety certifying organization. They're completely private, and way back when they started out making standards for fire prevention and construction and stuff like that. And now, you know, if you have a lamp or electrical appliance, it'll have a little UL tag on it, and you look at that, and people trust it. And this was before government got into the act of forcing people to have, you know, do everything according to their standards. And UL, I guess, must have done such a good job that the government never did get into the act. And I don't remember where it was, but there are places that have enacted standards that have to do with the things that UL certifies. They have pretty well just thrown in the towel, and when they do pass a law, the law just says, well, do whatever UL says, simply because they got accepted widely in their field before the government could even get involved, and so they couldn't do anything about it. And I don't know why you couldn't do that with meat packing or like drugs, the FDA and that sort of thing. And this, but one thing that, you know, I don't think that you can, you know, just toss away is the idea of certifications. I mean, you know, Nick says, well, I wouldn't poison anybody because if I poison somebody, people wouldn't come back. But I don't know how much confidence that's given me when I show up, you know, to buy some meat from Nick. But if there's a label like the UL label stuck on his meat that from a certifying organization like Underwriters Labs or whatever you would call it for food, I'd probably feel better about it. But it would be private, and the government wouldn't have to coerce Nick to do it. Nick would do it because he wanted the people to trust him. What do you think, Nick?
I think that's perfectly reasonable. I live next door, or I guess down the road, from some people that are I don't know what they exactly are, but they're high ranked in this. I believe it's a certification company, much like Underwater Laboratories, but it's
Underwriter.
Yes.
Not underwater.
I kind of like underwater. Go ahead.
But it's for it's a farming practice called biodynamic farming. It was started by Rudolf Steiner. It's related to the Waldorf schools that he did. But it's a very specific way of farming related to sustainable organic farming. And they do exactly that. They certify people privately for their farming practices, and it's very well possible to do that.
And they probably are able to sell their products in grocery stores or health food stores or whatever, and the grocers feel comfortable about carrying it because it carries the certification, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, this whole thing, I mean, it's huge. There's something like, I don't know, back 100 years ago, like 5% of all professions, not 100 years ago, I think around 1950, maybe 5% of all professions or jobs in the United States required a government license to work. And now it's almost up to a third. And the whole thing, I mean, and it's purely a scam. I mean, a complete and total scam. Occupational licensing is put in, you know, supposedly to protect the public. And you have to have a license before you can do anything, or at least 30% of things. You have to have the license to do that, and it doesn't really guarantee quality at all. And to the extent that it does guarantee quality, it doesn't do it as good as, you know, some other methods, but it always raises the price. I mean, if Nick Hazelton was able to add his yak meat to the market, the price of yak burgers, you know, would probably be lower in Oregon or Washington. Which state are you in?
I'm in Oregon.
Yeah, yeah. And the Oregon price for an Oregon yak burger, you know, could get a little better if you could open that up. And private certifications are perfectly good. Even professions, you know, like a doctor or, well, I'm a lawyer. I have to belong to the state bar. And if I try to, you know, give somebody legal advice or come into court and I don't have my license current, I can be thrown in jail for practicing without a license. There's really no reason for that. And that could be handled by certifications. Not that you'd have to have a certification, but that your clients, your customers might want to see that certification. They might want to see it on their yak burger. They might want to see it on their lawyer. They might want to know that their doctor has been certified by the United Brain Surgeons of America before he lets that surgeon cut his head open. And the whole thing could be, the protection aspect could be duplicated without having any government involvement. Matter of fact, it'd probably be better. I mean, anybody that thinks that a law license is some sort of guarantee of competency certified by the government, they need to have their head examined. What do you think, Lou?
Well, let's get to the root of the problem. Nick, if you butcher a yak on your own and throw it in the freezer and then you give away steaks and burgers to friends and family, what are the regulations regarding that if you give it away free of charge?
None.
Okay. I was talking to a guy a couple of years ago. He was running for the U.S. House of Representatives in my old area, and we were having this discussion about licensing and all this other nonsense, and being a Republican socialist like he is, being the anti-business Republican socialist that he is, he said that it's fine to give something away, but once you throw money into the equation and it becomes a business, that's when it has to be regulated. You know, small government conservative type Republican. So... yeah. They just basically hate business and
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Hey, this is Lou, and I am joined by Randy England and Nick Hazelton. Now, you tell people that the market will provide, and they just freak out and lose their marbles all over the place. You tell them government will provide, and they swoon and cheer and bow down and start praying. And that's why I hate talking to small government conservative Republicans.
My hero.
I was talking about that congressional candidate in the last segment, and if you look at the act of exchanging food for money or the act of exchanging food for nothing more than a thank you, the key point behind all that is you are giving somebody food. Now, whether you are receiving payment for it or not is really not that relevant, because even if you're giving it away for free, if the food is bad, like let's say Nick had a diseased yak or something like that, and the person that received it for free or paid for it, you know, caught the disease that the yak had, it doesn't really matter if money was exchanged.
Well, so that's not the point, though, right? The point.
Well,
the point
it should
is,
be the point. The point is the government is a parasite. And it has to have a cut of everything. It's the vulture circling the prey.
Yeah, but the cut here is for the big meat processor, the big yak farmer, who wants all these rules in place, rules that are so onerous that Nick can't possibly follow, do all the rules and still be competitive. They want, you know, it's about the money, and they're able to keep Nick out of the business by having a lot of rules that stop him from selling his yak burger.
Right. But when you look at government using the excuse of safety and all this other stuff, that is for them to remain relevant and for them to also get a cut.
Well, it does keep them relevant, but they're also feathering the nests of their friends.
So government and the large actors in the market are like binary predators. They work together. They're symbiotic.
That's a good image, I think, and parasitic.
Yeah,
together on us.
You know, up here in Bearskat, I'm in a pretty rural area, and a lot of people up here raise chickens. I think everybody deer hunts up here, and you can take your deer down to the local butcher shop, and they'll carve it up for you and put it into steaks and roast and make some jerky and all that other stuff. But a lot of people up here, they do that themselves. So if my neighbor knows how to do this, why couldn't he charge me for processing my deer? And incidentally, it's also illegal to sell wild game up here for food in that regard. It's illegal in the entire state of Michigan. So I can't go get a deer and sell summer sausage.
And Nick can't take his yak to your deer butcher.
Well, you'd have to ride it out here, and he has to tame it first.
I want a picture, you guys, Nick.
I can go to the butcher and I can buy elk sausage. That's interesting.
Well,
you guys can do that.
Well, they have there's farm raised elk sausage. You know, elk. Some of the wild animals are farm raised, so those folks have special dispensation from the Church of the State. But me, as a regular schmo hunter, I can't go out and shoot a deer or shoot an elk or catch a bunch of fish and then go and sell it on my own, because I don't have permission to do that. But I can give it away for free all day long.
Isn't that a thing?
Now, let me ask you guys. We've been talking about, you know, how there's other solutions in that. But everybody, all of us seem to be against the government regulation of this, and that there are private ways that these interests could be protected. So are you against it because it would work better if it was the government got out of it? Or are you against it because the government just doesn't have any business in your business?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that we're about to go to the market, right?
Yep. So more of the market will provide. Second hour coming up right after these messages.
We'll be back.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squigelts from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean?
Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, second hour, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And welcome back. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy England, Esquire, the Freedom Fiends legal counsel.
And Wampus and, Cat.
Yeah, and Wampus Cat, and Nick Hazelton, the Hazy Yak, our youth farmer correspondent.
That's me.
And our topic tonight is the market versus the state. For those of you that know me personally or have been listening to the show for a while, you know that I'm not a real technical guy. I'm not a real gadget guy, but I just picked up a couple of new electronic gadgets I'm really excited about. I just got a Samsung Galaxy 5 cell phone. I had to get rid of my four-year-old BlackBerry because, well, it was a four-year-old BlackBerry and it doesn't work so well.
You are excited then, aren't you?
Oh, I am. This thing is so cool. My new phone can beat up my first five computers all at the same time. This thing moves quickly, and you hit an app and it pops right up and it starts doing all this neat stuff. And a sign that I'm getting older is that the very first app that I installed on was the weather app. But I'm not so old I'm not so old that I can use my arthritis to figure out the weather on my own.
Hey, you're a guy on the go. You need to know if it's going to rain, whether you need to take your umbrella, which would be kind of a square, but, you know, sure.
Yeah, but really, up here in Bearskat, you can't trust the weather forecast anyway, because it's, like, always subject to change. Matter of fact, you can't even trust looking out the window, because from the time you look at the window to the time you get outside, it can literally change. That's how crazy it is up here.
You're looking out the wrong window.
And then something else, Monday morning, I got an email from Amazon because, you know, I get stuff from Amazon and I'm a member of Amazon Prime, where you can, like, get your movies, TV shows, music, all kinds of neat stuff. And I got an email for a special offer that they had. The Amazon Fire Kindle 7 was, like, almost 50% off. It normally goes for, like, $130-some, I think it is, and they had it on sale for, like, $70-some. So I see this, and I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool. And plus, I've been, you know, thinking about the Amazon Kindle because it's compatible with the Amazon Prime movie and TV service, which means that, you know, I can watch the TV shows and movies on the Kindle. Yeah. As well as, you know, doing all the other stuff with it. So anyway, I click on it, and, you know, it shows, you know, like, the basic thing. And it's got the little click, you know, for learn more, and it gives you all the specifics and details on it. And as I'm going down the page reading all these features on there, I'm like, oh, my God, this is great. And I'm scrolling the wheel on the mouse and going down the page, and it seems like it's never going to end, and I don't care. I'm like, I hope it never ends, because look at all this cool stuff. As a matter of fact, I can even download movies on there and watch them later without using any data plan.
So this is a Kindle. It's not just a Kindle. It's a Kindle Fire, which is like a tablet, isn't that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Amazon's own product.
Now, is that an Android phone? I mean, an Android tablet, right?
Yeah, I believe it's on the Android system.
Can it? Does it use Google Play to get its applications, or does it get them from somewhere else?
I'm not really sure. It hasn't arrived yet.
Oh, so there's much to learn then.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Your phone, the phone is Android, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the Samsung Galaxy 5.
And you probably go to the Google store to get applications for it?
Yes.
And how much, what kind of capacity do they have now? I haven't bought one in a couple of years. I'm thinking of getting one, but, 32 gigabytes.
I think the phone on its own without the SD memory card is 8 gigabytes.
Okay. And how much, what about the memory that it uses, what do they call it, RAM memory, I guess, that it operates with? I mean, usually that would be, I got a tablet that's not too quick and it's got like 1 gigabyte, but then I've got a little phone that's 2 gigabytes and it moves along pretty good. So you usually have to have plenty of capacity there to move quickly and not get stalled.
Yeah, I don't know what all the specs are on it, but the phone works really well. I read the reviews on the tablet and the reviews on there were really great. So when I saw it, I'm like, oh my God, I've been thinking about this and looking at the price on it. I wound up getting the tablet, the leather protective case, and it's got the little kickstand so you can prop it up in either a landscape or a portrait view. It comes with 3 screen protectors and a 2-year warranty. I think it came out to like $153.
Wow.
But as I was reading through the features of it and all the stuff that you can do, I'm like, God, I hope this page never ends.
What kind of screen does the tablet have?
7-inch.
How big? 7-inch? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, in contrast to screen on the, or the page on the tablet doing the description, last week was tax day, and not once was I scrolling down saying, God, I hope this never ends. So, like, when I think about stuff that I get from the market, I really like that. But when it comes to stuff from the state, like filling out your income taxes and they ask you about your foreign land holdings, foreign accounts, do you have your Obamacare and all this other stuff, and it's just really horrible. I can't think of anything really that the average person goes to government for that is worth a darn.
Well, you need police and courts and prisons.
No, I don't.
So wait, who's going to stop the polluters?
Who's stopping them now?
What about the post office?
What about socialism for packages? Lysander Spooner will take. Lysander Spooner will take care of that.
Your namesake, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he? He's the one who made his own post office, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he was so successful that they shut him down.
I have heard him referred to as the father of the 3-cent stamp.
Okay.
Because
I've heard that before. The
only way they could shut him down, something I read, I don't remember when, but the only way they could shut him down, because the public loved it, the cheap letters. Mm-hmm. I mean, back in, the early 1800s, I guess 50 cents for a letter was pretty pricey.
Yeah.
It's still pricey, but back then it was that, and he got the price down to like 3 cents a letter, and the only way the government could put him out of business was if they agreed and made letters 3 cents themselves, and so Lysander Spooner is the father of the 3-cent stamp. I don't even know if it's true, but somebody said that. I like it. Is that what they call truthiness?
Something like that.
It's good, even... I don't know.
Going back to the phone.
Yeah.
When I think about when I was down at the Verizon store and they're talking about all the features that they have as far as like the regular service, do you want the super duper voicemail? Do you want, the super duper caller ID, and do you want the protection plan and all this other stuff? That's kind of like when I was in Walmart the other night. First thing I did was I went to check out the barbecue grills because I want a nice barbecue grill that I can put in my garage and then just wheel out instead of using like one of my grills from when I go camping. So I go in there, I'm checking that out, and I'm trying to figure out which one I want. Then I'm walking over to Sporting Goods to look for what's on sale in the discount rack. And on the way over to Sporting Goods, I went by the tool section, and I saw like some precision screwdrivers and a little wrench set, and I bought those on an impulse buy because they're like $5 for each package. And then I went over and I got my bottle of water and sandwich stuff and all this other stuff. And the market is you go in, you get what you want. Now, just imagine being in the grocery store and you walk past the cans of red beets and some employee comes over, grabs a couple cans, throws them in your cart, but you don't like red beets. So you take them out, you put them back on the shelf, and then the store employee pulls out a gun and says, "No, you will take those red beets." And then you go over to another section and they throw in something else that you don't like.
It's kind of like being in school then, what they put on your plate maybe, I don't know.
No, it's an analogy for the state. Yes. I mean, could you imagine when it came to security and protection, they give you a checklist. Okay, would you like somebody to patrol your neighborhood and look for burglars? I'm pretty sure most people would check yes. Now, for an additional charge, if you check this box here, we'll kick in your neighbor's door if he's smoking a plant. Now, would you sign up for that part of the service?
Depending on how much I disliked my neighbor.
Well, just remember this. He's filling out the same form.
Oh, well, yeah. All right.
Or maybe there's a box that you can check for breaking up a card game if your neighbors get together and want to play poker and actually use chips or real money.
Well, see, I could say yes because I don't have any vices, but I better not say that. I'm sure I do something that they wouldn't like. Yeah, the idea that if you actually had to pay it on a la carte basis, you probably would not outlaw illegal drugs, drinking, gambling, things like that.
I have no doubt in my mind that there are some people out there that would, because they're such Puritans and they're just bedeviled at the fact that somebody out there somewhere might be happy. But I don't think the average person would do that. I really don't.
Well, the problem is that it would if we think it's expensive now to run the drug war. Just think how expensive it would be if everybody was not pitching in, if the only people that helped pay for it were the ones that wanted to help pay for it. It'd be kind of like getting a decent war off the ground. If every time you wanted to go to war, somebody would put a tip jar on the internet or an Indiegogo campaign to go to war against Saddam Hussein, they might not get enough money even to go. But I love the idea.
I am very happy that you brought that up. And, well, we'll talk about that more when we come back from the market. More Freedom Fiends coming up right after this.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market. And when we left, before we went to the break, I think we were talking a little bit about how you might get up, do important things without the government. And my question was, how you could get up a good war if you didn't have the government to do that for you. You don't have to tax everybody to get up the money. And I think Lou had some more thoughts on that. you were thinking maybe they could get up a good war even without the government. Is that right?
Well, no, not really.
Okay.
And this whole conversation for the second hour stems from a conversation that I had with a face beast friend of mine, and he seems to think that large corporations accumulating wealth would be able to finance a war. So if we look back at the cost of wars, because wars are never cheap. I mean, because you're going to need the weaponry, you're going to need the people to do the fighting. And I think if you're hiring a private army, it's going to cost a lot more than using the poverty draft like the government does. And plus, you also don't have that 12-plus years of state indoctrination where they say, oh, yes, yes, it's good to fight a war for your country. Now, I don't think that there would be any indoctrination program saying that it's good to fight a war for your company. But anyway, so if you look at like Standard Oil and United Fruit with using the military to go into Guatemala and these other places, the reason being is if a private company, well, first of all, a private company has to come up with the type of money to finance a war. Next up, they have to actually win, because if they don't win, then all that money that they spent is gone and they're pretty much done. They're out of business. But also, the reward that they get. So if it's stealing resources or something like that, they have to actually get more in resources than what they spent to get those resources. So it has to be profitable to go to war. Under the current status system, it's profitable for companies to go to war because they're manufacturing weapons.
It.
Yeah. They're manufacturing the weapons, and the cost of war is socialized to the tax cattle. So
that's true. So are you're saying that you don't think that private funding could get a good war off the ground?
No, I think Joe's Pizzeria might be able to go up against Tony's Pizzeria. But I don't think anything like United Fruit or Standard Oil would have been able to.
Yeah, but that's just crime. I mean, here I am.
Right.
I live in Jefferson City, Missouri, and some crazy company up in Oregon by Nick decides that they want to attack somebody in Washington State, you know, across the border, and I'm not sure how that even affects me. I mean, I guess it's a problem up there, but without a state to conduct a war, financing is maybe the least of your problems, right?
I think so.
Well, I mean, just the whole problem of, say, you know, we went to war with England, you know, and they attacked
again,
you know, and they attacked the United States or the North American continent, and we didn't have a federal government, or if the federal government didn't have any power, and they came and they, let's say they once again took Washington D.C. and burned the White House, like they did in 1812, was it? And they would say, okay, and then they'd get the president and put a gun to his head, and he would say, I surrender, and he'd sign the surrender. And here I am, you know, 1,000 miles away, saying, I don't care. What
Shoot
is
him.
This to me? I'm not going to do what you say. You think you've conquered a country? You conquered a house.
Yeah.
So, I mean, without a central government, you can't even start. I mean, if it was bad going, you know, house to house in a town in Iraq, imagine going house to house in the USA. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, well, a little point to inject in that. England did attack. Well, theoretically, they attacked, and there was no central government here in America, and they were defeated because, the Articles of Confederation were in place when the War for American Independence was won. And strangely enough, the Constitution was in place during the War of 1812 when the British went into Mordor on the Potomac and burned down the White House.
I find it kind of interesting that in the one war, the war that I think that you know, the country was in mortal danger, you might say, where its very existence, you know, was in doubt, was probably the Revolution. And that was the one war that was the federal government had no taxing power.
Right.
And they had, it was just whatever they could beg from the individual colonies, and yet they had enough.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Hey there, guys. This is Nick Hazelton with the Freedom Fiends. I've got Lusander Fiend and Randy England on with me. How are you guys doing?
Hey, we're back.
Flames.
Yeah, we were talking about private companies and their possible ability to wage a war without government support. And I believe we're all on the side that it would be impossible for them to really be able to even try to do that. And I looked up some statistics on how much wars have costed, at least the U.S. And I have it all up here. It looks like every major war that the U.S. was involved in. But it cost about $1 trillion for the Iraq War.
Just Iraq, and not Afghanistan?
No, yeah, just Iraq.
Just Iraq. To get whatever, this is what it costs to get Saddam and save us from the weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, and also stop him from torturing people in his prisons.
Right.
Because we thought we should be the ones torturing people in his prisons?
You keep using this word we. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
I'm going to go wash my mouth out with soap. I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah,
go
put a Satoshi in the state of swear jar.
All right, mea culpa.
No, but it seems like it'd be very hard for a company to come up with $1 trillion just to fight a war. That sounds ridiculous to me. I don't know why anybody would even try to do that, to try and make that profitable.
Well, you know, when you think about it, though, the Iraq War was free, because during that same period of time, we were spending $1.1 trillion on the Iraq War. Oh, Lou, don't make me come over there. During that same period of time, how much did the Fed increase its balance sheet by? Was that maybe $1 trillion or so? Or was it more than that?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm thinking that maybe the Iraq War was a freebie, because we were just able to, have the Fed, buy the U.S. securities and everything to pay for it. And so we got it for nothing.
Or maybe they just put on a credit card and they keep getting introductory offers and transferring the balances every 6 months.
Kind of like that is what I was saying. But pretending for a moment that we actually had to pay for the war, you were going to go on, Nick, before you were so rudely interrupted.
Oh, I also calculated the individual cost per person. for $1.1 trillion for every American citizen. So if there are 318.9 million people living in the United States, and all of them pay taxes, then they would have paid $3,500 each for the Iraq War.
A bargain at twice the price. Yes.
And how much was Afghanistan?
I believe it was more than that. I'm looking at another document. It says it was, I guess, a little bit over $1 trillion.
Okay, does the government save money by buying in bulk?
I would assume so.
Okay, so here we're talking about over $2 trillion, and that's verified money. That doesn't include the stuff that goes missing all the time, that, you know, a billion here, a billion there. So it is highly likely that private sector war might be a little bit more cost efficient. I don't know how much that is the case, but let's say that they could do let's say they could do BOGO and get both wars for just $1.1 million. You know, buy one, get one free. Still, who's going to come up with $1.1 trillion?
I certainly can't.
Yeah, I don't have it in my desk drawer. How about you, Randy? You're a criminal defense lawyer.
that's really right up my alley. You know, I think that there would be a real problem with paying for actually aggressive wars. I think a more realistic problem in a free society, a stateless society, would be financing defense that you had no choice but to finance. In other words, if there was some foreign invader. Now, before I say that, I guess it's pretty obvious that the likelihood of foreign invasion would be a lot less, right?
It's probably about zero and below.
Well, who might want to invade us, this landmass that you and I live on?
Under the current way of doing things, it's not entirely unlikely that the rest of the world would say, you know what, the empire has to stop. And all the other countries get together and say, all right, we've had enough of this U.S. imperialism. Or keep your U.S. exceptionalism to yourself.
Oh, they don't care about our exceptionalism. They care about us going over there and beating them over the head.
I'm being facetious.
Ah, well, but if we didn't have, say, a federal government and there were no troops anywhere in the world beating up on anybody, I'm thinking that a lot of the motivation to attack us, can I say us? Is that okay? Like me and mm-hmm. you and Nick?
Yeah.
Okay. Attack us would go away. I mean, why would anyone want to bother with us? Even was it Osama bin Laden when he was given his excuses as to why 9/11, said that we're over there, doing that because your troops are on the ground over here in the Middle East. And a lot of people don't believe that, but the truth is that they had their ideological differences and religious differences with Americans long before 9/11, but we didn't have troops in Saudi Arabia. We didn't have those provocations, and they were not willing, apparently, to do anything as drastic as a 9/11 for the mere provocation of they didn't like our lifestyle or our religion or our freedom or whatever they might not have liked.
Yeah, that whole they hate us for our freedom stuff, it is pure nonsense. All right, pure nonsense. If you want to know if blowback is possibly real, I mean, even if it's just remotely possible, let's say, and I'm sending this out to all the conservative Tea Party Republicans, let's say Russia and China did us a great service by coming in and liberating the oppressed people of the United States from the Obama regime. Now, let's say they implemented regime change and they installed a Republican puppet in there, but they didn't leave afterwards. you know, let's say they stuck around and they kept kicking in doors, and let's say, you know, they put up a school for your children to go to, but they still kicked in your doors. They set up checkpoints, and every time you went through, you got patted down and all these other things. At what point would you consider them to be foreign invaders? At what point would you consider them to be hostile? And at what point would you consider becoming an insurgent and kicking the foreign invaders out of your homeland? If there's a point where it comes around to that, then you're thinking exactly what most of those people have been thinking the entire time.
Oh, well, sure. And that, I mean, that's just putting yourself in the other guy's shoes. You know, it's kind of, it's hard to watch, stories of, say, some kid in Afghanistan whose family got killed, you know, by a drone, and then they've picked up an AK-47 and decided to kill Americans and hear them referred to as terrorists. I can't possibly understand that at all. It makes no sense. If the shoe was on the other foot and I picked up the AK-47 after some foreign invader killed my family, I mean, I'd at least be worthy of the title, you know.
You're a hero here.
I'm a hero.
And you're a hero to your neighbors and a terrorist to your enemies.
But you're not a terrorist when you're in your own backyard. I don't know how anyone could be a terrorist, you know, in their own backyard protecting that from a foreign invader. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it's
or a domestic invader for that matter.
Or a domestic. Well, yeah. When you say a foreign invader, you know, we're kind of talking about somebody from overseas, or at least from Canada or Mexico, which almost none of those things are even going to happen. Yeah, the biggest security threats we have are people that are just angry with the United States from our activities around the world. And you almost wonder if it weren't for that, we would be completely left alone and would have no more need for an army than Costa Rica. Or Liechtenstein.
Switzerland. Or like
that. Yeah, Switzerland, the Vatican. I don't know.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. So government doesn't really solve problems. They create problems with their solutions when they solve problems that don't exist. And quite frankly, all these external threats that have been fed to the general population over the years have been made up, and anything that was real was created. You know, it was the result of doing stupid stuff. But anyway, moving along, how could a company possibly get so big that they could afford to do a war, or they could just amass massive power? I mean, how can a company start out? Like, let's say a Walmart. How can they start out as a single store, a mom and pop shop, and grow into a big giant Leviathan monster, without the assistance of government? One, keeping out other competition, and two, funneling corporate welfare to them. How would that be possible?
Well, what would they lose if there were no state to grant them favors? There would be no state granting them a formal corporation status. Not sure what effect that would have on them and their growth. There would be no state to offer them too big to fail bailouts, right?
Right.
There would be no amendment, no constitutional provision allowing eminent domain, so that when they wanted a piece of property that some poor guy, you know, didn't want to sell to them, they wouldn't be able to get it, which they can now. I mean, I guess the list goes on and on of all the favors that they could not get if there was no one to give them the favors. If everything they got simply had to be earned from customers.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And if it was possible to get big without government, then why would any single business ever waste a penny on buying off a politician? Worms. Point.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Whee!
is the Freedom Fiends. Oh, yeah. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy England and Nick Hazelton.
Evening.
And here we are in the final segment, and we got some redemption in the third act. I came across an article earlier today that really got me excited. This comes from Controversial Times, and the title is Chicago Gunman Stopped by Concealed Carry Uber Driver.
You mean he stopped and, like, asked for a cigarette or something?
No. The concealed carry Uber driver in Chicago actually shot six times at this guy. I'm not sure how many times he hit him, but the suspect, I guess he had opened fire.
It's a cab driver, right?
Yeah. No, it's the Uber driver. The Uber driver.
Okay, but that's a taxi cab, right?
No, that's a ride share, because they don't pay for all those special licenses and permits to be considered taxis.
Who cares about that?
Because
a cab driver.
Well, yeah, in the real world, but anyway,
cab driver.
So anyway, the suspect, I guess he had opened fire in a crowd of people was shooting at him, and the driver just dropped off his fare, and he went over and took action. So here you have, I'm really excited about this because government, particularly Chicago, they hate people owning guns, and they also hate Uber because Uber doesn't pay all the taxi license fees and all that other nonsense. And so we have this guy doing something that no cop, or doing two things that no cop will ever do at the same time in their entire career, and that's stopping a crime in progress and earning an honest day's living at the same time.
Well, the cops are just not going to be there when these things happen.
No.
So this guy, this was a potential mass murder.
Potential.
How many rounds were in this fellow's pistol that he was shooting, and he didn't even get to empty the gun, right?
That's my understanding.
Did the guy get killed?
Nope.
Okay, now, so what are they got? What's happening as far as trouble? The Uber driver is he legal? What's the deal with him?
Nick, what do you have on that?
He's the assistant.
Use your barnyard voice.
The assistant state's attorney Barry Quinn said that he was acting in self-defense, so he's getting away with no charges.
So an upstanding prosecutor in this case, then, who, of course, maybe not. Perhaps the public sentiment was such that the grandstanding thing to do was to applaud the Uber driver.
Yeah, or maybe, who knows? Maybe he was just too lazy. But what's going on with the company, Nick?
So the spokeswoman of the company said that all they require is that the drivers comply with local and state and federal laws with transporting firearms. And
so the guy's not in trouble for having a gun either with his employer.
Right.
Are people employed by Uber, or how's that work?
I think they're contracted.
Okay, but they're allowed.
I don't think that they're direct employees. I think they're contract employees.
But apparently he was allowed to carry a gun in his cab, and the company was cool with it, and the prosecutor was cool. Everybody was cool with it except the guy that he shot, apparently.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he's not too happy about it.
Well, I think that's a good thing. At some point, a crook, who wants to shoot some people, needs to stop and think, what happens if people around here have guns. I would think about that. Of course, if he was opening fire in a crowded place, he might have just been a crazy person. But even if it didn't deter him, perhaps it deterred him from shooting more people.
Yeah, it's really hard to say, because I don't think that you can really control crazy with laws.
No.
I don't think you can control much of anything with laws. But it's very nice to see this former victim disarmament zone get a little bit safer.
don't know. I like it. We, you know, here down here in Missouri, and of course, we have a whole lot of deer and deer hunters here, and concealed carry is very easy to get, and a lot of people carry, and I know I myself have been saved by a concealed carry weapon. Got a buddy of mine who stopped an armed robbery against himself a while back, and all he had to do was just threaten it, because the guy who was threatening had a knife and said, you know, why don't you just give me your wallet? And my friend reached under the steering wheel of the car and pulled his .45 out of the holster and suggested that this fellow with the knife reevaluate what he was doing. And the fellow took off running as fast as he could.
He should have taken the attempted robber's wallet.
That would have been good. I'm sure that the fellow that tried to rob him probably had a story to tell his baby mama when he got home. It was a good story. And of course, you know, my friend, I mean, he didn't want to have to shoot that gun.
No.
And he was obviously nervous and upset about it, but he was glad that it ended the way that it did.
Yeah. I mean, very few people want to kill another person.
Oh, no normal person will.
I mean, all the Hobbesian nonsense about people being bloodthirsty and brutal and all of their stuff is nonsense. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it.
I think all the time, I hope I never even have to threaten anybody, you know, with my concealed carry, let alone shoot anybody. I wouldn't want that to happen in a million years. But on the other hand, if someone broke into,